I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is July 11th, 2010. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's topic, an article that is entitled, More Than 40% of Americans Believe Jesus Christ Will Return to Earth by the Year 2050. The article begins, 40% of Americans believe he will return by 2050. Americans are largely optimistic about the future. From the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press and Smithsonian Magazine. I have a question. Assuming those Americans are correct and Christ returns, how do you figure that should be described as optimistic? Billions of people are to be murdered and sent to hell. Anyone who is optimistic about such an event is sick beyond description. The article continues, by mid-century, 71% believe cancer will be cured. 66% say artificial limbs will work better than real ones. And 81% believe computers will be able to converse like humans. Another question, what does any of that matter if the Christians are correct? The article continues, the poll also shows a sharp dip in overall optimism from 1999 when 81% said they were optimistic about life for themselves and their families. The current poll found just 64% were. My comment, I think we can all agree to chalk that decline up to our current recession. It goes on, 61% said they were optimistic about the future of the United States compared to 70% in 1999. And 56% predicted the U.S. economy would be stronger in 40 years compared to 64% of those polled in 1999. The results were compiled from telephone and online interviews with 1,546 adults in April. The margin of error is plus or minus 3 percentage points, according to Pew. Here are some other findings of the poll. 68% of those under 30 predict a world war by 2050. 53% say ordinary people will travel in space. 74% of those polled believe it is likely that most of our energy will come from sources other than coal, oil, and gas. Yet 72% believe the world is likely to experience a major worldwide energy crisis by 2050. 66% say the Earth will definitely or probably get warmer, but it breaks down strongly along political lines, with just 48% of Republicans saying so and 83% of Democrats. My comment, Republicans may be smarter in some areas, but not this one. That is just dopey. It continues, 42% say it is likely that scientists will be able to tell what people are thinking by scanning their brains, but 55% say this will definitely or probably not happen. Comment, that's assuming there is anything to scan. This poll would indicate that may not very often be the case. It continues, 89% believe a woman will be elected president by 2050. My comment, if it's Sarah Palin, I'm converting to Islam and moving to Yemen. More results from the poll. 86% say it is at least probable that most Americans will have to work into their 70s before retiring. 41% say Jesus Christ will return within the next 40 years, while 46% say this will definitely or probably not happen. 63% anticipate the demise of paper money. 61% say almost no one will send letters by 2050. 31% expect the planet will be struck by an asteroid. My final comment, we get struck every day. The question needs to be more precise. And now we move to the science segment. This article is entitled Unpeeling Atoms and Molecules from the Inside Out. The first published scientific results from the world's most powerful hard X-ray laser located at the Department of Energy's SLAC National Accelerator Laboratory show its unique ability to control the behaviors of individual electrons within simple atoms and molecules by stripping them away, one by one, in some cases creating hollow atoms. These early results describe in great detail how the linic coherent light source's intense pulses of X-ray light change the very atoms and molecules they are designed to image. Controlling those changes will be critical to achieving the atomic scale images of biological molecules and movies of chemical processes that the LCLS is designed to produce. In a report published in July 1st issue of Nature, a team led by the Argonne National Laboratory physicist Linda Young describes how they were able to tune LCLS pulses to selectively strip electrons, one by one, from atoms of neon gas. By varying the photon energies of the pulses, they could do it from the outside in, or a more difficult task, from the inside out, creating so-called hollow atoms. William Brinkman, director of the Department of Energy's Office of Science, said, "Until very recently, few believed that a free electron X-ray laser was even possible in principle, let alone capable of being used with this precision. That's what makes these results so exciting." Young, who led the first experiments in October with collaborators from SLAC and five other institutions, said no one has ever had access to X-rays of this intensity. So the way in which ultra-intense X-rays interact with matter was completely unknown. It was important to establish these basic interaction mechanisms. SLAC's Hakeem Storr, director of the LCLS, said, "When we thought of the first experiments with LCLS 10 years ago, we envisioned that the LCLS beam may actually be powerful enough to create hollow atoms. But at that time, it was only a dream. The dream has now become a reality." In another report published in Physical Review Letters, June 22nd, a team led by physicist Nora Barra of Western Michigan University, the third group to conduct experiments at the LCLS, describes the first experiments on molecules. Her group also created hollow atoms, in this case within molecules of nitrogen gas, and found surprising differences in the way short and long laser pulses of exactly the same energies stripped and damaged the nitrogen molecules. "We just introduced molecules into the chamber and looked at what was coming out there, and we found surprising new science," said Matthias Honer, a postdoctoral researcher in Barra's group at WMU and visiting scientist at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, who was first author of the paper. "Now we know that by reducing the pulse length, the interaction with the molecule becomes less violent." While the first experiments were designed to see what the LCLS can do and how its ultra-fast, ultra-bright pulses interact with atoms and molecules, they also paved the way for more complex experiments to come. Its unique capabilities make the LCLS a powerful tool for research in a wide range of fields, including physics, chemistry, biology, materials, and energy sciences. The LCLS forms images by scattering X-ray light off an atom, molecule, or larger sample of material. Yet when the LCLS X-rays are tightly focused by mirrors, each powerful laser pulse destroys any sample it hits, since certain types of damage, like the melting of a solid, are not instantaneous and only develop with time. The trick is to minimize the damage during the pulse itself and record the X-ray snapshot with a camera before the sample disintegrates. Both teams found that the shorter the laser pulse, the fewer electrons are stripped away from the atom or molecule, and the less damage is done. And both delved into the detailed mechanisms behind that damage. Atoms are a little like miniature solar systems, with their electrons orbiting at various distances from the nucleus in a sort of quantum fuzz. To make things simpler, scientists describe the electrons as orbiting in shells at specific distances from the nucleus. The innermost shell contains up to 2 electrons, the next one up to 8, the third one up to 18, and so on. Since they're closest to the positively charged nucleus, the 2 innermost electrons are generally the hardest to wrest away. But they also most readily absorb photons of X-ray light, and so are the most vulnerable to getting stripped away by intense X-rays. Although previous experiments with intense optical lasers had stripped neon atoms of most of their electrons, Young's was the first to discover how ultra-intense X-ray lasers do this. At low photon energies, the outer electrons are removed, leaving the inner electrons untouched. However, at higher photon energies, the inner electrons are the first to be ejected. Then the outer electrons cascade into the empty inner core, only to be kicked out by later parts of the same X-ray pulse. Even within the span of a single pulse, there may be times when both inner electrons are missing, creating a hollow atom that is transparent to X-rays. This transparency associated with hollow atoms could be a useful property for future imaging experiments, because it decreases the fraction of photons doing damage and allows a higher percentage of photons to scatter off the atom and create the image. Young said that the application of this phenomenon will also allow researchers to control how deeply an intense X-ray pulse penetrates into a sample. Barra's team bombarded puffs of nitrogen gas with laser pulses that ranged in duration from about 4 femtoseconds or quadrillionths of a second to 280 femtoseconds. No matter how short or long it was, though, each pulse contained the same amount of energy in the form of X-ray light, so you might expect that they would have roughly the same effects on the nitrogen molecules. But to the team's surprise, that was not the case. The long pulses stripped every single electron from the nitrogen molecules, starting with the ones closest to the nucleus. The short ones stripped off only some of them. The report attributes this to the frustrated absorption effect. Since the molecule's electrons are preferentially stripped from the innermost shells, there is simply not enough time during a short pulse for the molecule's outermost electrons to refill the innermost shells and get kicked out in turn. With all this activity going on inside the atom, scientists have a new way to explore atomic structure and dynamics. Further experiments have investigated nanoclusters of atoms, protein nanocrystals, and even individual viruses, with results expected to be published in coming months. And now we move to the religion segment. Today, Islam explained in layman's terms. This is an article adapted from Dr. Peter Hammond's book, Slavery, Terrorism, and Islam: The Historical Roots and Contemporary Threat. It begins, "Islam is not a religion, nor is it a cult. In its fullest form, it is a complete, total, 100% system of life. Islam has religious, legal, political, economic, social, and military components. The religious component is a beard for all the other components. Islamization begins when there are sufficient Muslims in a country to agitate for their religious privileges." My comment. The operative word here is privileges. The Christians are the same way. They demand privileges, but they call them rights. The article continues. "When politically correct, tolerant, and culturally diverse societies agree to Muslim demands for their religious privileges, some of the other components tend to creep in as well. Here's how it works. As long as the Muslim population remains under 2% in any given country, they will be for the most part regarded as peace-loving minorities and not as a threat to other citizens. This would be the case in the United States, which is 0.6%, Australia, 1.5%, Italy, 1.5%, China, 1.8%, Norway, 1.8%, and Canada, 1.9%. Between 2 and 5%, they begin to proselytize from other ethnic minorities and disaffected groups, often with major recruiting from the jails and among street gangs. This is happening in Denmark, 2%, United Kingdom, where the Muslim population is 2.7%, Germany, 3.7%, Spain, 4%, Thailand, 4.6%. Between 5 and 10%, they exercise an inordinate influence in proportion to their percentage of the population. For example, they will push for the introduction of halal food, which is food that is clean by Islamic standards, thereby securing food preparation jobs for Muslims. They will increase pressure on supermarket chains to feature halal on their shelves, along with threats for failure to comply. This is occurring in the Philippines, 5%, Sweden, 5% Muslim, the Netherlands, 5.5%, Trinidad and Tobago, 5.8%, and France, 8%. At this point, they will work to get the ruling government to allow them to rule themselves within their own ghettos, under Sharia or Islamic law. The ultimate goal of Islamists is to establish Sharia law over the entire world. When Muslims approach 10% of the population, they tend to increase lawlessness as a means of complaint about their conditions. In Paris, we are already seeing car burnings. Any non-Muslim action offends Islam and results in uprising and threats, such as in Amsterdam, with opposition to Muhammad cartoons and films about Islam. Such tensions are seen daily, particularly in Muslim sections in Guyana, which is 10% Muslim, Kenya, 10%, India, 13.4%, Russia, 15%, Israel, 16%. After reaching 20%, nations can expect hair-trigger rioting, jihad militia formations, sporadic killings, and the burnings of Christian churches and Jewish synagogues, such as in Ethiopia, where the Muslim population is 32.8%. At 40%, nations experience widespread massacres, chronic terror attacks, and ongoing militia warfare, such as in Bosnia, where Muslims make up 40%, Chad, 53.1%, Lebanon, 59.7%. From 60%, nations experience unfettered persecution of non-believers and all other religions, including non-conforming Muslims. Sporadic ethnic cleansing, also known as genocide, use of Sharia law as a weapon, and jizya, the tax placed on infidels. This occurs in Malaysia, which is 60.4% Muslim, Albania, 70%, Sudan, 70%, Qatar, 77.5%. After 80%, expect daily intimidation and violent jihad, some state-run ethnic cleansing, and even some genocide as these nations drive out the infidels and move toward 100% Muslim. Such has been experienced and in some ways is ongoing in Bangladesh, 83% Muslim, Indonesia, 86.1%, Egypt, 90%, Syria, 90%, Tajikistan, 90%, Jordan, 92%, United Arab Emirates, 96%, Pakistan, 97%, Iraq, 97%, Iran, 98%, Gaza, 98.7%, Morocco, 98.7%, Palestine, 99%, Turkey, 99.8%. 100% will usher in the peace of Dar es Salaam, the Islamic House of Peace. Here, there's supposed to be peace because everyone is a Muslim. The madrasas are the only schools and the Quran is the only word. This is the case in Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, and Yemen. Unfortunately, peace is never achieved, as in these 100% states, the most radical Muslims intimidate and spew hatred and satisfy their bloodlust by killing less radical Muslims for a variety of reasons. This quote taken from Leon Uris in his book, The Hajj. Before I was 9, I had learned the basic canon of Arab life. It was me against my brother, me and my brother against our father, my family against my cousins and the clan against the tribe against the world, and all of us against the infidel. My comment. The following comes from Matthew 10, 34 through 36 in the Bible. See if you notice any similarities. Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be they of his own household. Ah, isn't religion beautiful? The article continues, It is important to understand that in some countries with well under 100% Muslim populations, such as France, the minority Muslim populations live in ghettos, within which they are 100% Muslim, and within which they live by Sharia law. The national police do not even enter these ghettos. There are no national courts, nor schools, nor non-Muslim religious facilities. In such situation, Muslims do not integrate into the community at large. The children attend madrasas. They learn only the Quran. To even associate with an infidel is a crime punishable with death. Therefore, in some areas of certain nations, Muslim imams and extremists exercise more power than the national average would indicate. Today's 1.5 billion Muslims make up 22% of the world's population, but their birth rates dwarf the birth rates of Christians, Hindus, Buddhists, and Jews, and all other believers. Muslims will exceed 50% of the world's population by the end of this century. My final comment, I can hardly wait. All this freedom and peace has just bored me to tears anyway. And now for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today, Robert Heinlein, born 1907, died 1988 at the age of 80. He was an American science fiction writer. He was one of the most popular, influential, and controversial authors of the genre. He set a high standard for science and engineering plausibility and helped to raise the genre's standards of literary quality. He was one of the first writers to break into mainstream general magazines, such as the Saturday Evening Post, in the late 1940s, with unvarnished science fiction. He was among the first authors of best-selling novel-length science fiction in the modern mass-market era. For many years, Heinlein, Isaac Asimov, and Arthur C. Clarke were known as the Big Three of science fiction. His 1961 novel, Stranger in a Strange Land, put him in the unexpected role of a Pied Piper of the sexual revolution and of the counterculture. And through this book, he was credited with popularizing the notion of polyamory. The following quote is especially poignant in light of our earlier discussion of Islam, and it applies to Christianity almost as much as it does to Islam. And here is the quote from Robert Heinlein. It is a truism that almost any sect, cult, or religion will legislate its creed into law if it acquires the political power to do so.
Are you ready, Goose? Start walking.